This is John Abrams, and this is The Variety Artist, episode 49. I was recently hired to perform at all the elementary schools in the Atwater School District. If you don't know, Atwater is in Central California. I was there for a week and had nothing to do but shows and sit in my hotel room. Well, before I went, I remembered that my friend Tim Mannix had moved there a few years back, so I contacted him on Facebook and we agreed to have breakfast. We did. It was great catching up with a friend. We talked about old times, caught up on what's going on now, and he was even nice enough to show me around his new house. One of the nice things about touring is that you get to catch up with old friends and meet new ones. Well, turns out that he had recently been to Colorado, and he had gone to a magic theater and met Cosmo Solano, the owner. I had heard of Cosmo through the magic world, but I didn't realize that he owned and ran his own theater. I had to talk to him. I had a million questions for him. What made him go from amazing close-up magician to running a theater? What are the tough parts about having a theater? How did he get involved in this whole darn thing? So here's our chat.
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
Most of us know my guest as one of the great close-up magicians of our time and creator of many magical effects, but he also owns and operates Cosmo's Magic Theater in Colorado. Living his dream, variety artist, I give you Cosmo Solano.
Hey there, how's it going?
It's going good, Cosmo. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good.
Good. We're going to talk about a lot of different things on this interview, but first, what is your favorite kind of magic to do?
I guess close-up magic is close to one-on-one as I can get. Well, actually, to be honest, if you're going to, I'll give you my real feeling on this is that I found a few years ago that I have a specific size of an audience that I like to do magic for that seems to really be perfect, and that's between about a dozen and 25 people. So I like doing magic for smaller groups, salon style, as they used to say.
Right, and that lends itself to close-up.
Yes.
So what inspired you to start that? Magic in general.
I don't know. I've been doing it since I was about 4 or 5. Thought it would be just a hobby. I wanted to be a cartoonist or an animator. That's what I wanted to do.
So what made you to take the leap into magic instead of that?
Well, you know what? I don't think I was as good as I could have been or felt like I should have been to be a professional artist. I was the kid at school who was the artist, but at the same time, there was always one kid who could just do anything. It was magical to watch him do it, and he would sit down and draw something, and it would be perfect, and I used to have to struggle a little bit. The magic thing just really resonated with me from when I was very young. I felt like I had something connected to it, always. I can always remember that. Seeing my first magic show, I felt like I kind of knew what the guy was doing, even though I had no idea what he was doing. I just felt connected to it, like he was speaking my language. I remember that being in third grade, watching my first magic show at a church.
Wow. When did you actually start doing it yourself after seeing that?
I got a magic kit when I was 12, and I did every trick. I put together a show, and I got paid something like $12, $15, something like that. Ooh. To do a show at a local apartment building that was doing a barbecue for all the residents. And then about 2 years later, I got hired to do maybe a birthday party or something like that. And I started getting paid to do shows when I was about 14.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
I remember my first paying gig was $25. I was an actor. So I did an entire 25 or 30 minute play 2 or 3 times. $25. I was so happy.
I know. I thought $12 was amazing or whatever I got. I think it was about 15. They passed the hat or something like that. I remember that.
Well, I sent you a little notice that asked what you're passionate about talking about. And one of the things you said was magic theory. I'm fascinated by that. Tell me about your magic theory.
You know, this is supposed to only last an hour, but if you get me started.
Go!
Yeah, I just love the psychology behind it. I love the thinking about things like the relationship between the audience and the performer. My favorite thing is that, is how do we make this more than just a trick, you know, for people. Mm-hmm. I can say this, my favorite quote right now, and it's something I think about literally daily, is something Max Maven said a while back on a documentary. He said that the biggest tragedy to happen to magic and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, sorry for not giving you a direct quote here, but right. Basically the biggest tragedy to happen to magic in the last century was that magicians took something that was inherently profound and rendered it trivial.
Mm.
And that really, really hit home with me when I heard that. And I thought, man, that is the that sums up my feelings about magic. I mean, it has so much to offer, and there's so many people just doing it like it's trivial. That's a perfect word for it.
Why do you think that is?
Because on the surface, it can be very easy to do. It's not hard to do a trick. It's just not, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, there's some difficult sleight of hand. I'm working on stuff every day after 40 years, you know.
Yeah,
but it's very easy to buy a trick that does the trick for you, a box that has a false bottom or a false panel or something.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be very easy, and it gives people who would love to be a performer an opportunity to be a performer without having to invest much emotionally or, I don't know what another word would be for that. I almost wanted to say spiritually, but I don't mean it that way.
Yeah.
From their heart or put some passion into it.
When someone gets a trick, what do you suggest that they do?
Specifically, these days you see stuff that you like on a video or something. You know, this is very common.
Right. YouTube's gigantic right now.
Exactly. Right. So I think you should find, and this is what I do, you find what makes you like it. You know, find something that you would love to watch or that you love to watch. You saw it and it sparked something in you, or it got you excited or fooled you, and make sure that that's where you're coming from when you work on, when you perform. I think it's all about sharing. I think it's all about sharing something you're excited about or passionate about.
Yeah.
Goes back to the whole thing where, you know, when you go see a great movie and you can't wait to tell someone, or you have a great meal and you go, you got to eat at this place.
Yeah.
Well, that's the way I've always done magic, as far as I can remember. You know, you got to see this, not let me show you something so that you'll think I'm cool, but I want you to see this, you know. So I think that's what people should do. And before they just grab a trick and say, I'm going to do this because someone did it on TV, does it really resonate with you? Does it really get you excited? And if so, try to convey that, give them that feeling.
Ryan, figure out why.
Yeah, figure out why it's something special to you. There's a lot of great magic out there. Something I really thought was cool, I loved watching the performer do, and I was going to name it, but I don't want to make somebody think I don't like this trick or I'm talking bad about somebody's trick.
Okay.
Because I actually think it's great. As I performed it in my show here, I'm speaking of something a lot of people don't know about, but I had a very small theater for a little while in my house for a couple of years where we had public shows.
Oh yeah, we're going to talk a lot about that.
And I performed it in there. It was on, and I just found the set list written on the back of a napkin.
Mm-hmm.
And that trick was on there. And I remember doing it and thinking, I forgot I was doing it, but I remember going, you know, doing it and taking it out of the show because as wonderful a trick as it is, it just wasn't me.
Yeah.
You know, so what I'm getting to is some people, they see a trick, they think it's great, they love it, they like it, or somebody gets a lot of attention because of it, and then they think they should do it and they'll keep doing it. I've seen so many performers do tricks that really don't work for them. But they're
right.
Great tricks.
Because they're copying what they saw on video or what they read about, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, instead of being themselves.
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about when you're talking about presentation?
In a way. I mean, I think it has to come from someplace deeper than just a script you write or some one-liners or whatever. Presentation should come from your, like I said, from the passion in you about it. And it makes it much easier, you know, to come up with stuff that's going to work for your audience. Boy, I mean, you've probably seen this, you know, having been at the Magic Castle for almost 18 years, I was hanging around there and I was obsessed with that place. If there wasn't a week, I didn't go at least a few nights all those years, unless I was out of town. Having been there, you'd watch a lot of guys do great tricks, great lines, and yet fall flat because it wasn't them. You know, they were just repeating it. So yeah, you have to find, you know, what makes sense for you and what works for you and what expresses you. That's really what it is. And so presentation to me isn't just having a character and having a script, but coming from deep inside you. I'm a huge fan of the idea that magicians are actors playing the parts of magicians.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not fully acting, which means really bringing in your emotions, then you're missing out on having a great time as a performer and giving your audience something amazing.
Yeah. And you can use that for any art, right?
Absolutely.
Juggling or balloon art or whatever it may be.
For sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
If you see something that inspires you, make it your own.
Yeah, exactly. I love that you say balloon art because, you know, when I was younger, I remember I must have had a bad experience with somebody who did balloons. And I'm pretty sure I can remember when it was, being a teenager working some banquet or something, doing close-up magic at the tables, and there was a balloon artist there who was uncomfortable to be around and all kinds of stuff. For a long time, I had that that stigma about balloon artists that is just, you know, we kind of look down at them sometimes, some magicians do. Fortunately, I grew out of that fairly quickly, but you know, there are great guys out, got people out there who do it, and they're artists and they're performers and they're fantastic. I love Carl Hine is a great example. If you know who he is, he's amazing, a magician, but at the same time he does balloons art, you know, and he's fantastic.
Well, I just, a couple of weeks ago, I had on my podcast, Annie Banani, who does balloon art storytelling. So she uses balloon art as costumes for the people on stage.
Oh, cool. Okay.
She is married to Buster Balloon, one of the best balloon artists in the world. And they're friends of mine here. And it's amazing. It's fantastic what they come up with.
I think you just have to figure out if you're really, really, really passionate about it. Find that and make sure you go from there. That's pretty much the bottom line. And as you said, with any art.
Now tell me about your 12-seat theater, your theater at home. What made you decide to do that?
Wow. Yeah. That's something that I miss right now deeply. And it was a dream come true. And it's not out of the picture for me, but right now it's kind of on hiatus, if you will. I was on the road with my best friend and who was somewhat of a manager for me for a short period of time. And I say that in that we just talked about magic and what to do in a show. I had just figured out probably within the last year before this, and this was about 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago when this was started. I'd just figured out that my favorite type of audience to have was between 10 and about 20 or 30 people, like I'd said earlier. Yeah. And I found out that there was this comfort zone that happens that if you're just one-on-one with somebody, especially if you just walk up to them at a table and they don't know you're coming, they're a little bit uncomfortable. They're kind of on the spot. If they're shy, then you run the risk of them feeling embarrassed no matter what you do, even if you're kind to them. And if you get into a bigger audience, which, by the way, I studied stage magic and I've performed in auditoriums and everything, but when you do bigger magic, it's a different kind of dynamic and relationship with the audience. It's not quite as personal. So that sweet spot for me seemed to be when I'd come home from a party, which I started doing a lot of, where they only had 10 or 20 people, maybe at the most 30. I would just sit there and jam and go crazy for 2 hours just doing magic for this. And a lot of times what would happen is they would gather around and they wouldn't leave, even though it was supposed to be walk around. So I'd do little 20 or 30 minute sets, you know, take a break and then come back and I'd be there for a couple hours. But I found that I'd come home just on cloud nine. You know, I remember walking into the bedroom, my wife's asleep, and I'm like, man, that was such a great night, you know, and she's like, I'll talk to you about it tomorrow, and I couldn't stop talking, you know, and it was just because I figured out that's the magic thing right there, that number, because you got people who can experience really intimate magic, but yet they're not on the spot, you know, they have 10 or 15 people around them, so they're not alone, and it, for me, that just seemed to be the, you know, sorry to sound cliche-ish, but the magic number.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get that out of my head. So every time I got booked, I would try to get those gigs as much as I could. And I try to do less and less walk around stuff. I turned that into almost, you know, my bread and butter, where people would call me and I'd convince them, let's do, if we have to, 3 or 4 shows throughout the night over in a corner somewhere or down in the basement of your home or whatever it is, you know.
Oh.
I did a lot of people who had amazing, ridiculous homes to where they had a place that you could go do this, and it was really cool. So when I say basement, I don't mean...
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Little room down in the basement.
I was doing magic in the dungeon.
Exactly. I was excited about that, and I was telling my buddy that when we were traveling. We traveled for about 3 months doing some stuff for an agency, and we started going to every magic show we could in any town we were in. We went to Chicago, New York, and stuff like that, and we tried to see as many shows as we could. And then we started talking about possibly doing, as they used to call them, salon shows, a small show for a small number of people. And he's a real businessman, and he started thinking about how we charge a ton of money and have super expensive wine and whiskey and cigars and all this stuff, you know. And it sounded really cool. Making that happen was a lot harder than I thought it would be, but we tried it out. To make a long story short, we tried it out here in Colorado at some very high-end cool places. We called it The 10. The show was called The 10 because we only allowed 10 people. It was at a premium, you know, it was fairly expensive for a small show like that. And I did a close-up show, about a 90 minutes close-up show. We did two a night. was hugely successful for us on a critical standpoint. You know, we didn't sell tons of tickets, but people just loved this. They'd never seen anything like it. And then I was sitting at home and I said, where can I do this next after we'd done several? And I realized I was sitting in my dining room, which we never used, and I was using it as a practice room. And has a high ceiling. Mm-hmm. And I went, what about in here? And literally within about 4 days, I had built a platform, brought in theater seats that this is another story I won't go into, but I owned 100 theater seats that had been sitting in my garage. They're brand new for a long time. And that wasn't because I was going to open a theater. I just happened to come across them and couldn't pass them up.
That's got to be a story.
That's a crazy story. So I run out to the garage. My wife sees me going across the kitchen with all these theater seats. What are you doing? I said, no, I'll talk to you later about it. And by the way, if you're a magician and you can find someone like my wife, you're very lucky, because she just rolls with it. I don't want to say she puts up with it, because she doesn't. She rolls with it. She knows this is the way life is.
You have to roll with it. Seeing her husband with a bunch of chairs and
going, and that's the least of the things she has to deal with. So yeah, I set up, I built, and I grew up in construction with my father, who has built a ton of the houses in my hometown of Pueblo, Colorado. So he was a big builder when I was a kid. And so I grew up framing houses from when I was about 12. So I built this platform, installed the seats, and had myself a little 10 seat theater.
Oh.
I had a beautiful close-up table that I had just built not too long before, very much like the ones you see at the Magic Castle, put up curtains behind me and turn it into a tiny little close-up room. It very similar to the Magic Castle. If anybody wants to look online at the close-up room on Facebook, the page is still there. You'll see pictures of it, and it's just decked out with magic stuff everywhere.
Oh, how
it's
neat.
Very cool. It still sits there, but we're not doing any shows in it right now. I go in there and practice.
So what happens? Yeah, you have your theater built. You're thinking to yourself, well, you know, I got to get an audience in there, right? So how did you get an audience to come to your house?
I'm really fortunate in having a lot of repeat clients. Mm. A lot of the stuff I do is the same people every year. And so I sent out emails and made phone calls and said, hey, you guys, I'm doing this. And they couldn't wait to come down. Oh. Well, in fact, we did that for the shows that we did at some of these places that we rented. We rented a building on a property of a castle here in Colorado. We rented this whole building. It was basically a house, you know, and it was gorgeous. And we rented that and we did the show in there. And we rented a hotel room and meeting room and did it in there and stuff like that. So a lot of those clients of mine came down if they were local. I mean, I have clients all over, but if they were in Colorado, they drove down. And then we just kept doing that, telling people, either people we knew or people who had hired me or whatever.
Yeah.
And we filled up the room. The cool thing is that I thought if we can do this about once a month, it'll just be great. It'll be just fun. You know, it wasn't supposed to be anything that and I never made a lot of money at it, but I mean, it wasn't supposed to be something I was trying to make a living at full time. We did one show on a Friday and we're sold out so quickly. We decided to do one on Saturday. And then we did, again, we were hoping to do it once a month if we were lucky. That's what I thought. Mm-hmm. We did it every weekend that first month, Friday and Saturday night, if I remember right. We might have missed a night or so. Pretty much we're doing, on average, for the next 2.5 years, about 3 to 4 shows a week. I mean, a month.
Nice.
We were doing an average of at least one a week, in other words, yeah. So it was awesome. And then a friend of mine is in a jazz band, and he had come to the show a couple of times. And he heard that we were having a country club, the staff from a country club come. And, oh, and by the way, it turned into stuff we did, team building. We did had companies bring their executives in if they were visiting from out of town. You know, like they're having him in for a corporate meeting. They call and say, we have 12 people. One time it was, I think, Progressive Insurance. We have 12 people coming in from all over the country. How many can you see? And I said, 12. And they said, awesome. We did stuff like that. But my friend was here and he said, you know, the country club people are coming. How would you feel if I bring my jazz band, they have a 3-piece jazz band here, into the house? And I have a huge, and I'm sitting in it right now, I have a really big rec room. And that's where the people would come and hang out before the show and have a glass of wine and stuff. Mm-hmm. And he goes, how about if we come and play jazz at your house? And I said, are you kidding me? That'd be a dream come true for me. Yeah, of course. And so they came and they set up over on the other side of the pool table, you know, and played live jazz music in my house while a dozen guests were mingling, waiting for the show to start. It was just unreal. It was unreal. I couldn't believe it was happening. So we started having them, you know, regularly whenever we could. Uh-huh. That became so cool.
Oh, that is very cool.
We did that for about 2.5 years.
Oh, yeah. And the first time it happened, were you like, hey, this happens all the time. No problem. They're always at my house playing jazz. Yeah, that's what happens.
Oh, the first time the jazz band was here?
Yeah.
I don't remember. I know we were just all overwhelmed. It was so great.
How fun. So how did you transition from the smaller 12-seat theater in your house to Cosmos Magic Theater?
You know, as I said, I owned 100 theater seats. Actually, my wife convinced me about a year before I started finally using them for something that I should put them on Craigslist and sell them. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at her going, you know, you're probably right. What am I going to ever do with these things? I sold about, I don't know, I think about 15 of them. Three here, six there. You know, people wanted them for their basements and stuff. Mm-hmm. I sold them maybe 15 or 20. So I'm sitting there with all these theater seats, and I had the little small theater going. And what this guy I met, really great guy, I met him at a party I was performing magic at, and we talked, and we became buddies. And he came over to the house, and we're on 2.5 acres. So he goes, hey, I want to bring my drone over to your house and fly it. And I go, yeah, that'd be awesome. So he has this huge drone, and it was really cool. And we'd fly it around and stuff, and we were sitting here talking, and he goes, how did you start the theater? Same kind of stuff you're asking me.
Yeah.
The next thing you know, he goes, you have 100 theater seats in your garage. I said, yeah, I got a bunch out there. And the next thing you know, we were talking about what it would be like to open a – he said, did you want to open a bigger theater? And I said, I don't know. That's not really what I was planning. But, you know, now that I've been doing this, it would be cool.
Yeah.
Somewhere along the way, he kept saying the word we. And he became a partner, and it felt like – we blinked, and the next thing you know, I was building a theater.
And that's how the whole thing started.
Yeah.
So what does Cosmos Magic Theater look like? I mean, how many seats? What do you do there?
We seat.
How does it work?
Technically, we seat 64. We can seat a little more than that because sometimes we put seats down on the floor, on the bottom, and basically the stage. So it's set up where the floor, when you walk in, that floor level is the stage. Mm. So the stage doesn't rise up. So anyway, so it's kind of on the floor. And then it does have tiered seating or raked seating, 5 rows. It's funny, opening night, we were packed. We had every seat sold plus probably 6 more, you know, they were sitting on the stairs practically. I found out that night that basically if you're sitting in the very front row, on the same level as the stage, you can't really see down onto the close-up table because primarily I'm doing a close-up sort of stand-up show. It's uh-huh. mostly close-up though. Yeah, we found out you can't really see what's going on the table if you're in the front row. So we took out those seats right after the first show. We never used them again unless we do like kids shows. First, we were only doing one show a week, and sometimes we'd skip a week. Mm. I went around and told hotels and people, and you know, I had a pretty good list of people who around Colorado and especially in Colorado Springs knew, you know, I did this stuff. So, you know, they were very supportive. We went back to the same thing I did in the close-up room, and I call it the close-up room, by the way, here in the house. We went back to that, what I was doing there. I never advertised it. I was technically not allowed to. In the city, if you have a business in your home, you're welcome to have people come and, you know, see the show, but you can't advertise it and you can't have strangers walking up trying to buy a ticket at the door.
Oh, okay.
Basically, at the end of every show, I would say, folks, thanks for coming, you know, and let me tell you, the only way we're going to be able to do this again is if you tell other people. And I got to give Joe Given credit. My buddy Joe Given, a longtime friend who has a theater in Colorado, and in his shows, he always tells people they're the sort of liaisons. Go out and spread the word for us. Mm-hmm. Having been to his theater a billion times, that's kind of ingrained in my head. No, I thought that was a great idea, and I told people, please tell others. And I would always say my line was, don't tell anybody to come to our show unless there's someone you would invite into your home. Because you're inviting them into my home. And if you'd invite them and you're comfortable with them in your home, then they're welcome in mine. And that was my little line at the end. And that word of mouth thing went crazy for us. You know, well, we only had 12 seats, but still, you know, we filled it up a lot.
It's tougher to fill up than people think.
Well, yeah, actually, you know, there was a few times when we had 6 people.
Yeah.
The majority of the time we were bringing in bar stools and putting 4 people on this, 2 people on each side.
Mm.
That happened a lot. And which was great, you know, it's just fantastic. So
yeah. And then you can say, hey, we're completely sold out. We had to actually add chairs.
Yeah. Right. I have a huge, huge amount of love in me for the Magic Castle.
Oh.
And specifically the close-up room. You know, I studied Chavez. I took Chavez with Dale Sawluck way back in the day. And I owned a couple of illusions and I owned a bunch of doves and the whole deal. But the close-up thing just kept connecting with me, and I just kept doing it, and I kept finding myself making a living doing that. Yeah. So I got out of that after 5 years or 6 years. I finally, actually, it wasn't until I met my wife and married her that I finally got rid of the doves, and I think I got rid of my zigzag.
Yeah.
which is like I'd been out in LA probably 10 years already. But uh-huh. So the close-up thing really hit home with me, and so I kind of modeled my room in the house here after the close-up room.
That's so smart, and that's such a great lesson for everybody. Once you find your passions, do everything in your power to follow those passions.
I often say that I'm not smart enough to know better, so I just kind of go with whatever I'm feeling at the moment.
There you go.
I can now say that I'm very encouraging to my kids to follow what they feel passionate about rather than what they think they should do to please anybody. And believe me, there's not very many people are bigger risk taker than me. And I don't do it because I'm a risk taker. I do it because I just don't know better. I just go out and do stuff. And then the next thing I know, I'm going, how am I going to pay the bills and feed my kids? I should have thought of that first.
So, but if you follow your passions, the money does come.
Yeah, eventually it will pan out. I did chase the money once. I stopped doing magic for 3 years.
Now, why did you stop doing magic?
My son, who is 16 now, when he was not quite two, developed pneumonia. It was the worst pneumonia the doctor at that hospital ever seen in his life, and he was a pediatrician. Ooh. And they had to open his chest up to clear it out. It was that bad. And he was in intensive care for 6 days. From the minute we took him there in an ambulance, it was that bad.
Wow.
So from the minute he got in to when he got out, he was in intensive care. And it really freaked me out. You know, there's always been this insecurity about, you know, you don't have a real job. You're an adult and you do card tricks for people. I struggled with that most of my career with that self-conscious thing, that, you know, insecurity.
You're not the only one. I do magic for children. I'm an entertainer. I do magic with live animals. I do a bunch of different things for elementary schools. That's kind of my jam.
Right.
Elementary schools and libraries. And I still get that to this day. Really? Do you make a living doing that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it can be difficult to internally not have that voice in your head, too.
Right.
And, you know, when I was a kid, I loved studying things about positive thinking. I think I read Think and Grow Rich when I was about 14.
Yep, me too.
And I loved it, business. And I thought, I'll get into real estate one day because there was a real estate thing going on, you know, nothing down seminars and stuff like that was happening when I was a teenager. And so taking risks and all that stuff. And I got out of magic. That's where we were. I got out of magic because my son getting sick. And I thought I should have a real job because it scared me, you know. Unfortunately, we had the right kind of insurance. And plus in Colorado, it's a good state for if you were down and out and you couldn't take care of yourself in the hospital or something, they come to your aid if you needed it. But fortunately we had the right kind of insurance at the time and my son was okay, but it still scared me. And it still scared me that I didn't have a regular schedule and that I was on the road sometimes and I was gone every weekend for 3 years.
Mm.
It just scared me. And I had been asked to do public speaking, basically sales presentations for a company. From a friend of mine who worked for this company was making a lot of money. And he said, you'd be so great here. And I kept saying no for a couple of years. And then I called him up that weekend and I said, can I come out and work for you guys? So I quit doing magic literally overnight and became a presenter for a company.
How did you like that?
Well, it was the most money I've ever made.
Yeah,
I loved it because I have never gotten into something, even if I didn't want to do it in the first place. Whenever I find something I have to do or I'm doing, I try to find what I can love about it. I just do. It didn't matter when I was working at Pizza Hut when I first got out to LA or when I was working in an accounting office. I was adding these sheets of numbers for an attorney, actually, a lawyer's office. And I just found ways to make it fun and love it.
Yeah.
Until a year goes by and I'm like, I don't want to do this anymore. But so I did that. I found the things about it that were great and I embraced them and had a great time. But then after about a year, I started losing my passion for what I was doing. I guess you feel like maybe you conquered it. Now what?
Yeah.
I think that's why magic is just doesn't stop for me. I am constantly looking for new stuff and practicing always. I mean, literally all day. I'm in my bar right now and there's magic junk all over. And then I'll go in the living room and there's a close-up pad on the coffee table. My wife keeps going, put that in your room. And there's stuff in the kitchen and there's stuff everywhere. I mean, it's not a huge mess here, don't get me wrong, but I just can't get it out of my head. So it's so challenging. It's always challenging. So yeah, that job, all the money I was making, I just couldn't do it anymore. And so about 6 months later, after being there 2 years, we left. And what it took to get out of, and it was in Las Vegas, to get out of there and get out of the job. And all, I had to walk away from the most money I'd ever made. And by the time we got moved, I had spent everything just trying to survive until we could move. And we got back here broke. But I was still excited about doing it. I mean, literally broke. We had enough money to live on for 2 weeks. And I wasn't sure what the heck I was going to do next. And I had three kids, you know. But that's me. I mean, that's what I do, and I don't do it on purpose. I find myself in a mess all the time, you know, or at least I used to. I don't know if it's so bad anymore.
That's what happens sometimes when you're following your dreams, right?
Yeah, yeah, sometimes. Trying to figure it out, you know.
All right, well, we're going to move on to fact or something John just made up. Sound like fun?
Okay, yeah.
Is it fact? Or is it something John just made up?
I'm going to read a headline, and you're going to tell me whether it's true or not. And if it is true, tell me a little more about it.
Okay.
First headline, Cosmo was banned from his grandmother's house for doing magic.
True.
What happened?
This is a great thing. I was about 12 and a half. It was the summer of my 12th year. I know that. I have a ton of cousins, and I'll always remember that my cousin Ray, we called him Little Ray. Mm-hmm. Little Ray got the sodas and the cookies. She would hide stuff for him. He was just his favorite, you know, her favorite. I remember thinking, I'm going to impress my grandma. So I had this dream that one day I'd become a big time professional magician. And I remember thinking I would do a full on illusion show in my grandparents' basement. I swear, I don't think I've ever told anybody this. I thought about that for years. Like, one day I'm going to come back, I'm going to do a full-on illusion show in my grandparents' basement, which was tiny, and I didn't know it at the time. You know, I, to me, it was a huge room. Anyway, so I wanted to impress my grandmother, and I did the vanishing scarf in the bare hands, you know, mm-hmm. the old yep. thing, and it freaked her out. Now, my grandmother, this is on my mom's side, Hispanic, and devout Catholic.
Yeah.
And when she saw this disappear from my bare hands, I was a kid, I was wearing a t-shirt. It just freaked her out. She thought I was possessed or something.
Oh, yeah.
She started saying things, using words in Spanish words that you shouldn't say to a kid, you know, cuss words. And then she just made me leave. And she just was yelling. I don't know what she was saying because she's speaking Spanish. I don't speak Spanish. I had to leave the room, and I was out in the front yard crying, and my uncle comes out and goes, "What'd you do to your grandmother? She's so upset."
Oh no.
And I said, "I showed her a magic trick." And he said, "You need to go show her. It's just a trick."
Yeah.
And I was reluctant, you know, cause I had just been learning that you're not supposed to give away the secret.
That's right.
Well, the coolest thing happened, at least it was cool later, was I showed her the trick, and she went from thinking I had supernatural powers to thinking it was the silliest thing she'd ever seen. And I remember her laughing, and I was so mad that I ruined it for both of us.
Oh, yeah.
At least she let me in her house after that.
Yeah, at least she got some cookies.
It was a great lesson, though, about why the secrets are so important.
It is true. When you give away the secret, sometimes, yeah, it kind of ruins the whole thing.
Oh, it definitely does, yeah. I wrote something very similar to this. I'm going to quote Derek Delgadio and give him credit for it, but I wrote it about 2 years before. Because when I heard him say this, I went and found my notes, and I said, dang, I said the same thing. I just never told anybody. But I was saying, I'll credit him for this, is basically the magicians don't keep secrets from you. They keep them for you.
Ah, nice.
It's a great saying. It's very important to know that.
I'll probably put that saying in the notes. All right, we're going to go on to the next headline. Here we go. I love that first story, by the way.
Thanks.
Here we go. Cosmo learned the three-card Monty from an inmate during time he spent in the Colorado State Penitentiary.
It's true also.
Is that true?
Yeah. Now I know how people like to quote stuff out of context. So if you're anybody out there listening, you're not allowed to go out and say that I did time, okay? Because I'll tell you what happened. This is what got me to LA. I was in Colorado. They were filming a television movie at the prison in mm-hmm. Canyon City, Colorado. At the time, I had moved to Canyon City right out of high school. Long story short, I ended up opening a tiny little magic shop in this tiny little cowboy town. The penitentiary is right there. So they were filming a movie for television, and they were looking for extras. And my brother told me about it. And I just always wanted to be, you know, an actor or, a magician and all that stuff. And I loved the idea of acting and all that. So I couldn't wait. And I went and auditioned, and I got a little extra role. You know, we were actually mingling with actual prisoners who were playing extras as well. And of course they weren't it was a maximum security penitentiary, but they were the lesser offenders, I guess, if you will.
Yeah.
And this guy was doing three card Monty like nothing I'd ever seen. And keep in mind, I was 18. At that time I was heavily into sleight of hand. I'd been studying it pretty hardcore since I was about 13. Mm-hmm. So I knew three card Monty, but this guy was unreal, you know, but that's all he did. He wasn't a magician. He didn't do any card tricks. He just did three card Monty like crazy. And he gave me a bunch of tips while we were there. And I spent a few weeks. It was supposed to be a week long job. Spent a few weeks there because I got along with the crew and the actors and everybody. And they said, you need to stick around. And I said, well, I'm done tomorrow. And they said, no, we're going to get you a job. And I got a job as a principal extra.
Oh.
And I got even a line, which they didn't end up using that scene, but I got a line. And
you get paid extra for the line, right?
I got paid extra for all of it. Yeah. I went from making whatever it was a day, like $35 to like close to 100 or something. I don't remember. Yeah.
Cosmo did not go to the Colorado State Penitentiary.
I didn't do time. I just spent a couple weeks in there.
Exactly. Cosmo did not do time. Yeah. All right. Next one. One time, Cosmo left his cup and ball routine at home and performed with three Dixie cups and three snails.
No, I never did that.
Okay. I just made that one up.
Yeah, that's a good one. I can see myself doing it.
I can see that too for some reason.
Well, I don't know about the snails, but...
All right, next line. Cosmo once drove 2 hours to the middle of nowhere to perform for a very small crowd.
I thought you were going to elaborate on the crowd.
No, I'll let you elaborate on the crowd.
Okay, well, this makes a better headline, though, I got to say. I went out to do a... something for a man, his wife, and a rooster.
Oh, wait, did you know you were hired for that, or did you just show up?
I knew it was supposed to be a very small thing, and it wasn't much, you know, it wasn't like a major, I was making money, really. I knew it was supposed to be, you know, a small group of people. I thought it was going to be a man, his wife, and his kids, and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember if somebody couldn't make it, but it turned out to be just a man, his wife, and they had a pet rooster that kept coming at me and kind of pecking at my leg. And it was crazy.
That was fact. Ooh. Or something John just made up.
Ah. All right, we're going to go on to some fan questions. You want to answer a couple of fan questions?
Sure, I'd love to.
And there's even one that you don't know about, as a matter of fact. Okay, here we go. Ron, is it Gadione? Gadione?
Oh, Giadone?
Is that his name?
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
He asked my favorite question of all questions I've ever asked in these interviews. He asks, how in the hell did you know what colors I was going to use?
Oh, my God. That's hilarious. Well, you can listen to the earlier part of this where I talked about my grandmother. If I told you, it would ruin everything for you.
There you go. Okay, I won't make you answer that one. All right. So, Jason, gosh, I don't know why I can't pronounce these last names. Maiuri.
Oh, yeah, Jason. And I'm not positive how to say that. He's a magician.
Yeah, he's a magician and theater technician. He asks, as a professional theater technician, I know what it takes to run a theater. My question is this. What do you think the biggest challenge has been opening a new theater?
Oh, goodness. I would say the biggest challenge is as advertising, for sure. You know, also not having probably put together enough money would have made things a lot easier. You know, we got hit with a $10,000 bill, not quite 10,000, but right before we opened, the week before we opened, because we found out that the room that people were going to be watching the show in was going to get way too hot. And we were told that they'll probably start passing out in here if you put 70 people in this room. We were 4 or 5 days away from opening. So we had to call an air conditioning place. Anyway, so not having enough money, you know, and advertising is difficult because it's expensive. I found we spent a lot of money on things that didn't work.
And you got to get those butts in the seats, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Tim Mannix, who's the guy that referred you, you know Tim, right?
Yeah. Well, I know him personally now because he was coming through Colorado and ended up getting to come to a show. What a cool guy. I love that guy. He's great.
Oh, really nice guy.
Yeah.
He's an award-winning magician out of Central California. Asks, it's kind of similar to Jason's question. What advice would you give someone who shares a similar vision of opening up their own magic or performance theater?
If I could only say three words, I'd say go for it. Just go for it. I mean, I don't know how to do anything any other way, really, to the chagrin of my own family, my wife and everybody. obviously you have to plan it out as best you can. Don't be afraid to, I guess, start smaller. But, you know, I'm very frugal. I'm super afraid of spending any money on anything because of having such a tough time for so long when I was younger and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'd say don't blow money on stuff you don't have to. This is a big deal for us. We decked this place out. And I think if you went and visited it, you would think we spent a heck of a lot more money than we did. Mm-hmm. It's set up like the Magic Castle in a way. It's got the Victorian mansion kind of feeling, the lobby. There's nice stuff everywhere. And looking at it, you'd think we spent about five times more than what we did. But we went to the Goodwill and to yard sales and got on Craigslist. And I don't know if I want to say this, but we have a beautiful chair in the lobby. I'm not sure if I should say this, but it's really nice. And it's one of my favorites in there. And my wife saw it on the road by the trash can at someone in front of someone's house.
Oh.
And she felt like, this is weird, but I feel like I shouldn't let them throw this away. And it's gorgeous. And I think it's actually an antique. Probably would have spent hundreds on it at least at an antique store.
Where I used to live, if ever you wanted to get rid of any furniture, all you'd do is you'd put it on the curb. And sure enough, 2 hours later, it would be gone.
Well, that's kind of what happened. So, I do a lot of my own stuff. I built, we would have probably spent tens of thousands on construction. But I built everything myself. And of course, you know, you have to worry that it'll pass inspection. Unfortunately, I knew what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that all went fine. But I worked from the minute we decided to do this from 6 a.m. in the morning sometimes till midnight, 7 days a week. My wife said, you never took a day off. And I thought, surely I took a couple of days to relax. She said, not one. And also, I think we did the whole thing. And by the way, here's the big piece of advice. If people tell you they're going to come and help you do stuff, don't even count on it. Just forget that. Nobody showed up. Not one person. I will say my buddy Jim, the bass player from the jazz band is in construction. And he did show up the last week or so and help with a lot of stuff. But by that time, pretty much everything is built. Anyway, so be willing to put in some sweat equity if you really want it to happen. And, you know, don't give up. Just keep going.
There you go. Now, you have a lot of magic products online. Tell me about Q, the quantum connection.
Well, that's kind of my baby. My dear friend, who I miss so much, Dean Dill, had a trick called Revelation. I had been hearing about it. It was rather expensive, and I had already moved away from L.A., so I didn't see Dean all the time like I used to, and it was brilliant. And he sold a ton of those. People love that trick, and it's a great thing. But it wasn't going to suit me. It wasn't going to work for me. And I came up with what I could call a pocket version of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and basically, it's a trick where you can name any card, and I can have it at my fingertips literally within seconds.
Huh.
I wouldn't mind saying what it was, but I know we're not supposed to do that, so I won't. But
no.
And by the way, it's for folded cards. Mm. So if you said the Seven of Diamonds, literally within a couple of seconds, I'd have the Seven of Diamonds, and I could produce it from anywhere I want, from inside a box or whatever, an envelope or, behind your ear, whatever.
Nice.
Yeah. And then that turned into a ton of routines that I do. So I actually use it probably three or four times for completely different routines throughout my show.
So I understand you have a new product coming out?
I do. And I'm really excited about it. And this has been a long time in the making. We ran into some snags along the way. I put out a product several years ago called International Pocket Change, which I won't go into a lot about that. As you know, there was some controversy around it. But that became something that literally gave me a stomachache anytime anybody wanted to talk to me about it. Oh. And I kind of put it on a back shelf. And when somebody would order, I would kind of cringe and I'd go get it and package it and send it out. And I don't know why. I just had a personal thing. I finally got over that and started looking at it again. And it's got a gimmick in there. And I redesigned the gimmick about five times. It's called Perfect Sense. I renamed it Perfect Sense because I was looking at the new gimmick saying, man, that's just about perfect finally.
And what does that look like?
It's a trick where you ask someone to give you an amount of change, money, coins, you know, up to a dollar, and you reach into your pocket and you pull out everything you have immediately, and without any fumbling, without anything. And that was the key to designing this. It had to be, I had to have you staring at my pocket while I did it. That was important to me. So I designed something that would do that. So instead of making you look away or anything, I would say, watch me go into my pocket, show my hand empty, go in, pull out my pocket inside out. Nothing else was in there with the exception of maybe some lint. And then you'd hand it over. And if they said 79 cents, they would count it out. And there'd be about 20 coins in their hand. So it'd be a big mess of coins. And they count it out and it'd be exactly 79 cents or whatever they say.
Can they get that at Trickside also?
No, actually, it's going to be released by Theory 11. So you'll be able to find it. I'm not sure if I'll actually have some of it myself to retail. I don't even remember what our agreement is. If so, I'll have some. But you can find it, you know, in the typical places. Go to Theory 11. I'm not sure if they're going to distribute it to other retailers like Penguin or not. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited. What a great company they are. So excited to work with them. They are about as, Jonathan Bame, who owns it, is about as professional and a good guy as you can ever ask for and all that. So it's a great company, and they got nothing but great products. So I'm excited to be a part of the lineup with them. I can't wait. I think we're seeing it come out here in the next literally days, maybe.
Maybe by the time this podcast comes out.
Yeah, hopefully.
Terrific. You know what I'll do is I'll go ahead and hunt down the link to Theory 11, and yeah, I'll put that on your show notes.
That'd be fantastic, yeah.
How can someone get a hold of some of your other magic products?
Most of them are at the places that are typical, Penguin and all that. Mm-hmm. I have a website. Some of my stuff, like Q, is only sold by me.
Oh, I see. Well, what is TrickSite.com?
That's my website.
All right. But if somebody wants Q, they're going to go to TrickSite?
They're going to go to TrickSite.com. Can I plug it a little, just really quick?
Please.
Say something. Jamie Ian Swiss and I got a hold of me a couple years ago, and we became pretty good friends online mostly. But when I go to LA, I try to hook up with him if we can. But he called that, he told me I could say this. He said it was the best or greatest invention in magic ever. Nice. And he absolutely loves it. And I don't plug my stuff enough or a lot. So I don't know. I get weird about
no, that's
about
good.
My own self. But yeah, Jamie loves it. And a number of, it's a who's who of magicians who own it and use it. I mean, Paul Vigil, you know, yep. If you know anybody in magic, you know who Paul is. He was one of the first people to just get out there and push it for me and tell everybody, you need to get this. I can't help it. It's my baby.
All right. So now, do you have a piece of advice for the beginner? Because we have a couple of different people that listen to
Yeah.
We have beginners and we have pros, mostly pros, but we do have some beginners. Do you have some advice for the beginner?
Actually, I'm glad that, and I didn't prepare anything for this, and I was a little worried about it now that you're asking me, but I realized there's one thing. I think it's really important for especially beginners to know that you're not a great magician because you can do great sleight of hand. You become a great magician because you can present magic to somebody. So a number of times over the years, and I used to take on a lot of students. Today, if I do anything, it's more of consulting with somebody who's already a pro, usually. A number of times I've had people who were having a rough time getting out there and doing the magic, but they were seriously into some sleight of hand stuff, you know. One guy came in and asked me for lessons one time when I worked in a magic shop in LA, and he was doing Paul diagonal palm shift stuff. I mean, he was amazing with his hands, but he wanted lessons. I said, you sure you want me to teach you? And he said, yeah, I that's all I know is these five moves, which are amazing. And it turned out that he couldn't perform for people to save his life. It was terrible. It was difficult. He would shake and get nervous. So I forced him to learn some self-working stuff and made him go out and not do any sleight of hand for about a month. Uh-huh. I made him buy a scotch and soda and the TT, as they call it, you know, the vanishing scarf thing. And he didn't want to do it. And I said, well, then I'm not giving you lessons anymore. Mm. And he did it. And about two or three weeks later, we're at the Magic Castle together and he performed for people like a whole different person. Mm. But so in other words, I'm saying if you're a beginner, don't be afraid to do something that other magicians might look at you and go, oh, that's easy. You can practice your sleight of hand, but get in, throw some easy stuff in there so that you can learn how to perform.
Smart.
That's super important.
Yeah. Well, how about some advice for the working pro?
Same thing. Get over yourself. I'm sorry. That sounds pretty rude.
No, that's good.
No. Yeah. I think I've seen a lot of people who look a little bit tired. Uh-huh. And I would love to see people rekindle that passion. Take another look at what you're doing and don't worry about what other magicians think. One of the best things that happened to me, and one of the most worst things that happened to me at the same time, was leaving LA and getting away from the Magic Castle. It was heartbreaking and I still miss it. But I was working restaurants here in Colorado when I first moved back, probably four nights a week. Magic was only being exposed to people who didn't know magic. Mm-hmm. And it really, I think I had that sense already enough, I mean, to a certain level, but it really increased that a lot to where I stopped looking at magic as, oh, this will impress the guys at the theater. I mean, at the castle.
Right.
And so I would say, don't forget who your audience is. Don't be afraid to do stuff that just is a great effect, even though it doesn't impress the guys or the gang. I don't mean any offense to the women out there in magic, but I just, you know, I mean that as a
Yeah.
Common term.
You know. I'm surprised sometimes when I'll look at a trick and I'll, or before I either purchase it or work on it, and I'll think to myself, well, gosh, is that really that good? Does that really get that good of a reaction? And then I'll do it and I'll practice it and put it in front of an audience. And sometimes I'm shocked at what the audience loves.
Yeah.
As compared to what other magicians would love. Other magicians would look at that and go, well, it's not really that great, but where it gets a huge, it can get a huge reaction from the audience.
For sure. For sure. In the middle of the show, not too long ago, I threw in a trick I hadn't done in forever. It's super easy, but it's a great trick. The slop shuffle, where they take a card and you mix up the cards back and yep. forth and they all come out. You know, it's super easy, but it's a strong effect. And I did in the middle of the show. Just, I don't even know why. You know, I jazz it up a lot in my show. It killed. I mean, they just went crazy. Oh, I say this to everybody, so I got to say this at least a little bit here. I would highly recommend that if you're a magician, no matter what kind of magic you do, you consider taking a course in sales if it's just reading some books. Mm-hmm. There's an amazing parallel.
Well, thanks, Cosmo, for doing my show. This was fun.
Oh, this was fun. I hope I didn't go on too long there.
No, you're perfect. It was great. It was great having you on.
I am really honored that you even are having me on here. I consider myself this person over in a corner somewhere that nobody knows about, and I'm fine with that, but I was kind of surprised to get the call, so thanks to Tim for recommending it. But and I love doing this stuff. Yeah.
And thanks to all my variety artists. If you found this podcast valuable, share it with your friends or on your social media. You can reach me at john@thevarietyartist.com, and make sure to tune in next Monday when we hear from Danny Orleans. He and I talk all about trade shows, everything you ever wanted to know about trade shows. And join my free Facebook group at The Variety Artist, where you can ask me to ask questions of our guests. Now go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist, but your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.